So again, my name is Donald Rothberg, and I live in Berkeley, California, near San Francisco. And my first time in Israel. I've been here about 2.5 weeks and have seen a lot so far. Until 2 days ago, I taught 11 days in a row, two retreats, two talks, and also got to visit Jerusalem twice, got to see with Aviv and Zohar. We went to East Jerusalem, got to have a sense of things, and have about 2 weeks left after this retreat, no more teaching of the usual kind, and I'll get to visit different places in Israel and go back to Jerusalem and visit Sfat and En Gedi and Masada and Jerusalem, Tel Aviv. So I'm pleased to be here. I thought I'd just say a little bit about my own background and then just some very generally about the retreat, just in a few minutes. I often think of my own background in three ways. I've been very interested. I've been practicing for about 40 years, since I was fairly young. And I have been very interested in traditional practice. When I look at different retreats, I think counting, I do for about last 35 years a weekly Shabbat, Sabbath, where I practice most of the day. And counting that, I think, at retreats, I probably have been on retreat 8 or 9 years total. So, yeah, it works. And maybe you have to judge, look at me, see whether it works. But I think it works well, and I've learned so much, and it's been very beautiful, and I've partly learned from the ancient tradition. That's partly, and studied with different teachers, both Western and Asian, in the traditions coming out of, particularly of Southeast Asia. Have met some great teachers in particularly Thailand. Achan Cha, Achan Buddhadasa, Achan Mahabua. And have also studied quite a bit in Tibetan tradition with a number of quite wonderful teachers. Some Zen. Back in the US, I once lived for 1 year in a Hasidic house. Kind of neo-Hasidic. It was not Orthodox. It was rather experimental. And have also done work with Native American traditions. For many years, I co-taught with a Native elder a combination of meditation and sweat lodge. So have interest in different traditions and how they can build together and learn from each other. So that's one part. But I've also had a very strong interest in connecting this practice with daily life. How do you do that? How do you do that, in a world which is very different from traditional societies, certainly in Asia? How do you do that with work, family, relationships, injustice, living in communities and so forth? So there's a lot that we need to do, and I've been interested very much in daily life practice and the development of community, and particularly some of the practices which help this, particularly speech and communication practice, practice with conflict, and the connection of psychology and meditation. Probably many of you are interested in that. And then a whole third area, which has been very important for me, is the connection of these inner practices and some of the practices I mentioned with addressing social change and meeting injustice and so forth. And I particularly have been involved, in addition to I would say selective activism, I've been particularly involved with helping to develop training programs, which I've done for over 20 years for people who are in the world doing social service, social change work, different kinds of work of different kinds, where people are quite involved in trying to make it a better place in various ways. And we've done a number of training programs, some of them 6 months long, some of them 2 years long, and so forth. And finding, you know, what is important to learn to be able to bring one's practice fully out into the world. What kind of training do we need? So kind of the equivalent of kind of like a graduate training program for awakening in the world. So I've done this with a number of people. So I think of those as like the three areas that have been important to me. I've also done writing and a few books and, you know, a lot of other forms of writing and teaching. And I think it's very connected with the theme of our retreat, which is, as I mentioned, awakening in the world, in daily life, in work, in social service and helping others, and also social change and activism. You know, each of you are maybe different aspects of that interest you, but we want to, what we're really looking at is how we train deeply in inner practice, and then how we connect that with how we live in the world, and how we help how we address suffering inside and also outside. And I think that the world really deeply needs people who have this capacity. It is so central right now with the different challenges in the world, you know, of all different kinds, you know, whether it's larger issues or just the issues of, you know, how do you have a good educational system for your children, or you know, how do you have a healthy community? Or how do you bring mindfulness and wisdom into medicine, healthcare? You know, all these different areas. I think what we deeply, deeply need, what the world needs, is people who have gone very deeply in an inner way, and then brought it out in a very deep and broad way into the world. You know, this is, you have signed up, so this is you. Okay. So the world needs you very, very deeply to go more deeply. And there is training that can help us be more skillful, that can see how we connect the inner work, which many of us know well. Some of us are newer here, and you will learn more. And then for some of us here, maybe it's more where we've done more in the outer work. And we want to maybe find more inner balance as we do activism, or as we help people who are ill, or whatever it is. Maybe we need to have more development of compassion and so forth. And so this retreat is for you. And it's brief. I would prefer to start a two-year training. But I think, I don't know, maybe I need more visa for that. I don't know. And so it's a short time, but hopefully our aim is that something in what we offer really sparks you and is helpful. And maybe I'll just finish and then let Zohar speak some by just telling a beautiful story that I've heard, which I think is also really points to what brings us here, I hope. And that is a story from a man named Howard Thurman from the U.S., African-American theologian, Christian theologian, and activist. Beautiful work, you know, like a mystical activist. And towards the end of his life, he always had a lot of projects. He helped set up in the 1940s and 50s in San Francisco some of the first churches that really brought together in a very full way African Americans and I guess European Americans. And towards the end of his life, in about 1970, he was asked by a young man, "What should I do?" Have you asked that as a young person? What should I do? I think people can answer that. Anyway, his answer was very beautiful. He said, this was interesting, think of him, he's an activist. He says, "Do not ask what the world needs." That sounds strange, doesn't it? Do not ask what the world needs, but ask what makes you come alive, because what the world needs is people who have come alive. So that's our intention here. Okay, thank you.
So hello again, and maybe just to extend an invitation from all of us that if at some point you don't understand something we're saying, it might be a word, it might be a sentence, then please feel free to stop us and we'll do our best to clarify. We might not succeed, but we'll definitely try, so please don't be shy, you know. It's not, English isn't everyone's first language, and I happen to have a bit of a strange accent, so just really feel free. If you don't understand, just
raise the hand.
Raise the hand, let us know, and we'll repeat, rephrase. So to say just briefly about myself, so my name is Zohar. Great to say it with the Hebrew pronunciation. So I'm going to say it again, Zohar, just for my own enjoyment. And I've been practicing for around 20 years, primarily in this tradition, in Saitovana, also Tibetan, some Vietnamese Zen. And what has been a real fire in my own practice was the very clear sense that the qualities that are cultivated in meditation, like compassion, like friendliness, like understanding, there was a real fire in me, and there still is, to have them expressed in the world. And so that's something I started exploring. And after some years, I started also exploring how to offer retreats, how to offer conditions for others to do that. Because what I learned was that that expression of compassion in the world actually deepened my own practice and wasn't separate. And so I'm really interested in that mutuality of, you know, we have this sense of self and other. And when we start to feel compassion and we want to address it, we're often initially doing it from that movement. I am helping you, or I want to help you, or I want to solve this. And what I learned was about actually deepening a practice through that, and actually learning more deeply and being transformed more deeply through that action. And so I'll say more at the end of the retreat about what I actually do. But just to kind of put that out there, that, you know, there's the expression of what comes through practice and the nourishment of practice, and then there's the service as a form of practice as well. So that's something we're going to also be touching on, and that, yeah, these identities of self and other, and what actually happens in a space where we are interested in looking deeper than that. More fully than that. So in a way we can say that this retreat is really about that integration of inner and outer, you know, that dissolving of those ideas of self and other, and also the integration that Donald was speaking about of practice in our daily life and our daily life also becoming our practice, you know, and all these different aspects. So, you know, for example of that, just right now, you know, I'm sure most of us are tired, yeah? And feeling the impact of the heat of the day. You know, that's a given, that's a condition that's here, that's in us. And so even on that very simple level, something that practice really nourishes in us is, okay, how do I actually include that instead of that being a problem? Yeah, how do I actually include that instead of that being a problem? How do I include that in my inquiry, in the deepening of my process? And, you know, I've done a lot of inquiry into that myself. And that can be really rich. So noticing how it's affecting. Yeah, how is it, what's the effect of that tiredness? And then very possibly there's some sense of fighting against it that's happening. Yeah, and how is that, I'm throwing quite a lot of things at you right now, but how is that actual resistance to the tiredness, how is that impacting my experience as well? So the inner, you know, we can say inner, outer. The external condition of the physical tiredness and the heat, and the internal way of holding that. And that's really something we're going to be looking at from different angles, different perspectives, over the 2 days. I forgot to look at my watch before I started. Okay, I'll still try to be brief. So what happens when I tell a joke and it's actually funny? That's a good thing to notice as well. You know, what happens in the body and the mind when we laugh and we smile? What happened to that tiredness, even if it's for a split second? So the path, the Dharma path that we're exploring here, Dharma is a word that we're going to use primarily as the Buddhist teachings, has many meanings. So this path is a path of awakening to life, yeah? This retreat is called Awakening in the World. And for many of us, whether we've done retreats before or not, the main thing we associate with this path is silent meditation practice. That's the main thing we associate. It's helpful to remember, to know, that the Buddha's path isn't only silent meditation. And actually, the path that he taught is spoken of, it's divided into kind of three, we can say, themes or three areas that I'm just going to put out there. And, you know, if you can take them on. If it feels like too much, then just let them slide like a cool, refreshing water off your tired face. And so, first of all, what does it mean, a path of awakening? It's a path that's leading us to less suffering in our own lives, and also to causing less suffering to others. And the three areas that the path includes are, and I'm not going to give the Pali words here, but we can say that the path includes an area of non-harming, yeah? And kindness, non-harming and kindness, and we'll say more about that. There's an area of developing the capacity of gathering our attention and gathering our intention, yeah, which is what we primarily usually associate with meditation practice. And there's the third area, which is cultivating a deeper understanding. Usually the word that's used for this is wisdom. Deeper understanding of life, yeah? Using primarily our own experience to develop that. Or we can say a deeper understanding of what leads to suffering or what causes suffering and what doesn't is another way of saying that. So on this retreat, we'll be exploring these three. Yeah, we'll be exploring these three. So we'll be spending some time in silent meditation, yeah, cultivating that capacity to gather our attention. To gather our intention, to let things settle and to rest. Yeah, that's one thing we'll be doing. And then we'll also be using some talks and some exercises which we'll be investigating, using tools of investigation to look more deeply into our experience so that we can understand more about what causes suffering and what supports us to let go of suffering. And these tools that we'll be using then support our capacity to meditate or to gather the attention more fully. Yeah. And so all these three, they're not linear. Yeah. In a tradition, we say, you know, the non-harming attitude and practices, the cultivation of the gatheredness of attention and intention, and the development of deeper understanding. And we have to say it in an order, because that's the way language works. But they all support each other. They all feed each other. There isn't a hierarchy. There isn't one that's more important. And that's also really important for me to kind of transmit. All aspects of the path that support each other. And so the non-harming, just to kind of say a couple of sentences about that, that is the underlying, and I'll be saying a little bit more about it, is the underlying container of the practice, that intention to not cause harm. Underlying support to our practice. So I'll pass this over to Aviv, but yeah, just at this point, wanting to just wish all of us a really deeply nourishing time and rejuvenating time.
I forgot to remember.
You have to do that.
Move yourself. Okay, sorry.
So, good evening, Erev Tov. Yes, so a little bit about why I'm sitting here, how I got to suddenly be here. So for me, for many, many years, I felt, you know, my life is a pretty good life. It's a very, very, like, I have so many things to be happy about. And I'm living in a society where there's quite a lot of bad things happening, or quite a lot of suffering, maybe it's a better word. Quite a lot of suffering happening. And it always made me feel uncomfortable. And especially in my spiritual practice, like to sit, for example, in a retreat, when, you know, the world doesn't stop and things happen in the world and things happen in this country, and sometimes it can be a war or sometimes it can be something else, less dramatic but no less suffering. And the same thing in other practices, not necessarily Vipassana, that I've been practicing over the years, and all the time I would feel very, very uneasy about creating this very safe and precious space that allows for so many good things to happen, but with such a contrast to what's going on really, really close, but we create this isolation. I think I said before supper, I live in Jerusalem, and I mean, I think all of us are pretty good at living our lives and like concentrating on our issues and not being overwhelmed by whatever's happening around us that can be overwhelming. But in Jerusalem still, it's you have to make more effort not to notice. Yeah, you can walk in the street and you see the sign, municipality put many signs everywhere where a bus blew up or a restaurant blew up. So you just the places you walk every day, you see, ah yeah, here people were killed, here people were killed. Or you go to the movie and you lift your head up by mistake, like outside of the cinematheque, and suddenly you see the separation barrier. Yeah, or even from my home, if I look in the wrong direction, I see the separation barrier. So I can just go for a very nice walk and get this reminder. Or I can go for a beer in the center of town and see some Israeli teenagers looking for Palestinians to beat up, and so on. So the separation, like I said, in Jerusalem it's even more difficult. So eventually what happened, and what I'm very, very grateful for, is that together with friends, practitioner friends, and Shiri is one of them, we created a few years ago a group that said, okay, we need to bring the two together. Since we have this goodness in our lives, and since we belong to a Sangha, to a community that is cultivating so much goodness, then probably we have something we can give to society. And it's been going on for a few years, doing social action, supported by practice as an expression of practice. Probably like Zohar, I will elaborate about it more in the end of the retreat. And although this, I'm telling it, and I'm feeling it as well as my personal journey, it's something I think that is developing in the Israeli Dharma community, yeah, in a broader sense. It's not just myself or a few people that feel the need to bring social involvement, social engagement, and spiritual practice together. And I think it's the process is basically a maturing of the Israeli Dharma community. And you know, Dharma, I mean, it may be very interesting to think about it, that Dharma came to the West and Dharma came to Israel as something very, very specific. And maybe it's not even an exaggeration to say as some kind of fringe culture, yeah, not the mainstream of society, but something fringe. And of course, Dharma in the East, it's not fringe. It's like Judaism or Islam here. And coming like coming here as something that is a bit exotic or esoteric or not really part of daily life, then yeah, the main expression of Dharma for many, many years here in Israel was the retreat. In the last several years, we see it developing, we see it growing in many, many ways, because, yeah, I don't think many people here consider themselves as fringe. Maybe some, yeah, but today, yeah, it's not necessarily, we're not the fringe who are practicing. And if we are a bit closer to the mainstream, then probably our practice is also becoming more and more relevant to the whole of our lives. It's not just about spirituality, as if it's somehow disconnected from my relationships with my friends, with my family, at work, from what's important to me, from whatever, from the daily issues, the nice things and the challenges. So it's nice also that here in this retreat, not that we aim to transform the Vipassana retreat, it's very, very important and good to have it, but it's also nice to see how in this retreat we are also doing things a little bit different, and seeing that practice is not only the formal meditation, sitting with our eyes closed, and it's not only being silent, and we will have this in big parts of our time together, but also how we can practice when we are interacting with each other, when even when we are, for example, speaking with each other. So, and this is something to give special attention to, because yes, silence is such an important and central part of meditation practice. And those of you who have experienced it know how much it allows us, how it changes our perception, our awareness, our experience. And here in this retreat, although we will be taking plenty of time for silence, we will also be coming out of it. And it's an opportunity to see that silence is not just, you know, stopping my lips from moving. It's not just not speaking. Okay, silence is an invitation for something very, very active. So when I'm speaking and I'm active, what part of the quality of being silent, of listening to the silence, what part of this quality can continue with me when, maybe at first a little bit easier, when I'm listening to my partner speaking or to someone in the group speaking, and then when I speak myself. So it looks like, and it probably can also feel like, two things that are very, very different from each other. Okay, I'm quiet, I can concentrate inside, I can go inside, I can be challenging, many, many things, but it's me with myself. And then suddenly, okay, now please speak to him, speak to her, speak in the group about whatever. It can feel like two very different things. And part of what we will be trying to do is, okay, keep the awareness that we developed in meditation, in silent meditation, how can I keep it now as I'm talking, as I'm listening? And maybe we will learn valuable things from it that will also deepen our listening practice, our awareness practice. Now, it's not necessarily simple, so hopefully we will be able to help you like with reminders and instructions tomorrow and on Saturday. But this is also part of, like, we are holding this together. So if I feel a little bit uncomfortable, oh, I don't really wish to speak, I'm enjoying so much not speaking, then check, maybe I can do it. Maybe the resistance, sometimes the resistance is telling of something quite true and important, and then I need to listen to it, and maybe I will speak less. Okay, but sometimes maybe the resistance is something a little bit more superficial, that if I am patient with and I don't go with it too strongly, it can pass away, and I can feel more comfortable in, okay, I move from one condition to another condition. It's also true on coming back, yeah? We talked or I listened, and it can be very exciting. Maybe many thoughts, maybe emotions, maybe there's some question I keep on thinking of now, I cannot let go of it, or maybe someone said something that really touched me or made me angry, and now I have to be quiet again. Okay, so these two may require some determination, some effort. It's also an opportunity to see how meditation is not just to, you know, okay, I can let go of all these things that are disturbing me and just find inner peace. No, meditation maybe is to sit with whatever is echoing inside, because of things that happened to me in my life. For example, something that happened in a conversation. So hopefully it will be very rich, this experiment of ours. For those of you who are maybe newer at meditation, and it's a first retreat, so there will be instructions for the meditation, explanations for the meditation. You will experience what silence can cultivate inside us. And we will see how it goes. And I think it's the good word for it is we can treat it as an experiment, like especially those of us who are used to 48 hours of silence, uninterrupted silence. Okay, it's going to be a little bit different. Let's see how it works.
Just one more word about the schedule. I think we'll be having roughly maybe about 60% of the time in silence. And both days we'll be in silence until about, I think, 10:30. Is it 10:30?
Yeah.
I think it is. Yeah. Yeah, 10:30 both mornings, and then we'll have some time when we bring in those kind of practices that Aviv was talking about, more interactive and attempting to have a very strong sense of practice, but sometimes opening the mouth to speak. So we'll have, I think the interactive session is about 2.5 hours in the morning, then we go back into silence. And then we have again about 2.5 hours in the afternoon and go back into silence. And in the evening, tomorrow evening, there'll be a talk. But what I have found in our training programs is that this going back and forth between silence and interaction with a sense of practice, it's where the learning occurs. Tremendous learning, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And that's what we want to encourage you, of course, to bring into daily life more. And so we'll have a similar schedule on Sunday up to the end of the retreat. So again, a morning silence till about 10:30, and then afternoon session as well. Again, go back into silence, then afternoon session, and so forth. And I'll just say each morning, at 6:30 we'll be here, and we'll have a combination of Qigong, which I will teach, and meditation. How many of you have practiced Qigong? A lot. Huh? Very good Qigong in Israel? Yeah? And it'll be suitable for beginners, no problem. Okay? So very simple, very easy. Not even moving, just mostly standing practice. So not much, not difficult physically, okay? And so we'll do that, and we'll go right into meditation, and you'll see, I think, how it's really about the mind-body relationship, that the calming and energizing of the body can be so important for silent practice, but also for bringing practice into the world. So, okay. I can turn this off.